B-Pod Studios.
Give me three times that you walked off the grounds at Augusta National and said to yourself, I just don't know if I'll ever see something that great again.
I had three in a row.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and those that love it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is brought to you by Neogenics Stem Cell and Regenerative Therapies, where all you have to lose is pain. Now, here's your host, a man who considers a pencil with an eraser essential golf equipment, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Neogenics Stem Cell and Regenerative Therapies, where all you have to lose is pain. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT underscore golf guy. Well, we've made it. The first major championship of 2021 and when it's supposed to be played. It's Masters Week, or as it's known in my house, High Holy Days. Look, I lived and worked in Augusta for 5.5 years. I love everything about the tournament and the Augusta National Golf Club, and with all apologies to my good friends at our Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club. The Masters is the finest tournament in every way on the planet, and I love this week more than any other throughout the year. To preview this 2021 edition of the tournament, I've assembled three people who combined have covered more than a century's worth of Masters. Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com, Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and our boots on the ground, if you will, in the central Savannah River area, John Patrick, host of the Augusta Golf Show. So let's get it started with a past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award for Journalism, Ron Cyrak. Well, Ron, before we get to your 33rd or 32nd Masters that you're covering this week at Augusta National, let's take care of a little business on the lady golf front. I want to start with where you are, the Augusta National Women's Amateur. I got to hand it to the men of the Masters. They put on a hell of a show for us every year with the Masters because they figured out how to set up their course for the men for the most drama. It's entertainment. It's fantastic. And apparently they hit the ground running with the Augusta National Women's Amateur. I mean, Kupcho and Fosse were great theater 2 years ago at the inaugural one. And then Cacciatani and Migliocchio, how great were they on Saturday?
Yeah, you know, they do a brilliant job here of setting the golf course up backwards. What they do is they get to the green and they think, okay, what club do we want to have them be hitting in here? And if they think this hole's made to be having a 7-iron coming in, then they figure out where to put the tees so that they can do that. And the course was perfect for the games. Now, it was playing a lot tougher than it probably did 2 years ago, and we saw some disasters coming down the stretch, but it was a very, very compelling finish. I mean, look, two players tied for first, six players tied for second. You had eight players within one stroke of the lead. You can't get any better than that.
I think what I like most about watching the end of that tournament down the stretch was, I don't know if this is the right word, the humanity of it all, the normalness of it all. We were reminded that these are amateur golfers, and you mentioned that there were train wrecks coming down the stretch. We had three putts. We had double bogeys. We had all sorts of fireworks going on, and you were reminded that although these are tremendous, tremendous lady golfers, they are indeed still amateurs, and they make mistakes and do things that amateurs do.
Yeah, we had Rose Zhang, who's 17 years old, the reigning U.S. Women's Amateur Championship, and she finished one stroke out of the playoff, and she made a triple bogey on number 13. lost one ball and hit another ball into the penalty area. So, yep, we saw a lot of that coming in. And you're absolutely right. The humanity of all this is probably what makes it such a compelling event. These are young women playing golf and playing it on a really, really tough golf course in front of the largest audience in terms of the TV audience that they've ever played in front of.
Now, one thing that you and I started talking about 3 years ago, and I kind of want to see if your position has maybe changed, because I know that mine has. One of the traditions of the A&A Inspiration, the first major on the LPGA calendar, dating back to its Dinah Shore days, was the top amateur golfers were always invited to play at the A&A, and they always looked forward to and did play in it. Well, the Augusta National Women's Amateur is on that same weekend, so they've got to make that choice. I, for one, when it first happened, I was like, come on, guys, can't we get together and move this? But now, I think I like the fact that there's a separate place for the amateurs to shine. They can be professionals soon enough. And I don't miss them at the A&A now that there's this other compelling event. Your thoughts?
Well, I think there's no question that what the Augusta National Women's Amateur, the attention that it brings to women's golf is just unprecedented. And that's a really, really good thing for it. I think the whole situation of them going up against each other, it's going to be resolved over time. Next year, a new TV contract goes into effect for the LPGA Tour. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some wiggle room. You know, the A&A used to be a week earlier, and they moved it originally to get it away from the Players' Championship. The first time the Players' Championship was in March. So you might see something happen there so that the both events could coexist quite nicely.
Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com is our guest taking Dead Aim while we're talking about the A&A Inspiration. It was shaping up to be a really boring final round, and then all of a sudden, the once and future queen, perhaps, Lydia Ko, emerged from the ashes like a phoenix. Actually, it was a 59 watch for a very long time yesterday afternoon, and I thought it was a hell of a show that she got within two shots of Tavitanikit, but wow, to see Lydia Ko playing good golf again, kind of like we're going to talk in a minute about Jordan Spieth playing good golf again, that is nothing but good for Lady Golf.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that was really compelling about that. And one is the 62 that Lydia Ko shot could have been a lot lower.
Yes.
she left a few strokes out there. And the other thing is that Patty Tabanikic, shoots a 68 with no bogeys while somebody is laying while a multiple major champion is laying a 62 on her. So the fact that the age of 21 in essentially what's still her rookie year it was phenomenal the way she held her game together. And what we saw from her is we know she hits the ball long. She averaged 323 for the week off the tee. But we really saw a complete game. Her iron play was really good. Her chipping and putting was phenomenal. That was a very, very compelling little shootout by two players separated by three groups.
You know, I don't know what it is about the LPGA Tour, but it seems like, and maybe this is my imagination, it seems like every year we get a Mo Martin or Sophia Popoff or a Patty Tavitanikit who comes out of nowhere. Like, I've never heard of these people in my life, and they don't just play golf that week. They play some of the greatest golf you've ever seen and win major championships. I just don't think we see that on the men's tours often, or am I just not remembering something?
Well, no, I mean, it's funny. Every time somebody on the LPGA seems to come out of nowhere, and then you start looking around, and they really haven't come out of nowhere. They've come out of somewhere, but it's just not someplace that we were paying any attention to.
I love that.
And Patty's an example of that. She played at UCLA for a couple of years, was very good there. She came out last year, was a rookie last year. All the rookies last year in the LPGA, because of COVID, the COVID interruptions, had their rookie status extended into this year. She's got a couple of top 10 finishes. She finished fifth in a tournament this year, and she is somebody whose game is you're seeing it mature in front of your eyes. I've gone down the road on both the men's game and the women's game where we've crowned somebody the next Tiger way too soon. We've crowned somebody the next Annika way too soon. And it is way too soon to say Patty's going to be the next anything. But there was a lot of reason for the LPGA to feel very, very happy with what happened yesterday in the desert because this could be a star in the offing.
Well, and I was pleased to see, you know, for a long time in the tournament, Jennifer Kupcho's name was on the first page of the leaderboard. And we already mentioned her as the winner of the inaugural Augusta Women's Amateur 2 years ago. So, you know, I like seeing that.
Kupcho is very quietly on the fringes of making the U.S. Olympic team, Olympic golf team. You know, she's worked her way up the world rankings high enough that a country can take four players to the Olympics if they are all ranked within the top 15, and she's got a chance to do that.
Before we get off the A&A inspiration, I want to talk real quick. I saw some buzz about this online, and I thought it was very apropos to make a fuss over this. The title sponsor, A&A, is a Japanese or an Asian airline. And let's face it, the airline business did not have the best 2020 in the whole world. And the fact that they have stuck it out as not only a supporter of the LPGA Tour, but the title sponsor and their commitment to the LPGA in this first major, I thought was not just admirable, but really praiseworthy.
Yeah, and particularly when you look at the fact that a big part of being a title sponsor of a tournament on any tour is the corporate entertaining that you do at the event. And now they've had, you know, the last year's A&A was in September. They moved it to September because of COVID. And now we had this one. So they've really had two tournaments back-to-back where they could not do the kind of corporate entertaining that they want to do. Normally, they'd be bringing in plane loads of corporate executives from Japan to come in and play in the pro-am and do all these cocktail parties and all the corporate hospitality that goes on at a golf tournament all week. And they haven't been able to do it. So you're absolutely right. The fact that they've remained loyal sponsors, despite the fact that they haven't been able to get something that is really valuable for them to get out of this, all that corporate entertaining, is a highly admirable thing.
Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com is our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, let's shift locations. You are in, it's high holy days for me. You were in the promised land of Georgia, Augusta National. Your first tournament you covered was in 1988. This is your 32nd Masters. And I was trying to think, what could I ask you about that? And I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm not going to have you name one. I'm going to give you three. In the 32 Masters that you've covered, give me three times that you walked off the grounds at Augusta National and said to yourself, I just don't know if I'll ever see something that great again.
I had three in a row that were like that. 1995, Ben Crenshaw winning here when he came in with absolutely no form at all, no reason to think he was going to contend. And on the day before the tournament starts, he flies back to Austin, Texas to be pallbearer for his longtime coach, Harvey Pinnick. And then he comes back here and wins. And I'm thinking, I'm never going to get a story that good to write again. Well, the next year is Faldo Norman. Norman with a six-shot lead going into Sunday. Faldo shooting a 67, one of the great closing rounds in the history of major championship golf, to win the tournament and overcome it. And I'm thinking, I'm never going to get a story that good to write again. The next year, 21-year-old Tiger Woods wins by 12 strokes. So those three in a row, 95, 96, 97, made me realize that the Masters always has a way to outdo itself.
Let's talk about the tournament this year. It's kind of weird. The last major we had was the Masters in November. But this is not the Augusta National that gave up 20 under par in soft conditions just due to the time of year that it was in November. If everything holds form, we should get a fast, firm, and if you saw the women's amateur on this weekend, at times a nasty Augusta National waiting for the world's best, you know, men golfers. Is that the feeling you get around there right now?
Absolutely. I walked the course on Saturday when they were out playing in the final round of the women's am, and the course is firm and fast. The greens are a color right now that I've never seen them this early in the week. You know, I think if the weather cooperates, that they've got the golf course exactly where they want it to be, and we're not going to see 20 under par happen here. It's going to be a real test, a real challenge.
You know, the betting lines changed overnight as cool as Lydia Ko's reemergence was in a runner-up finish at the A&A. it was a really, really big deal to see Jordan Spieth be Jordan Spieth and not backdoor into a win. Had to fire 6 under par 66 on a Sunday to outlast Charlie Hoffman at the Valero Texas Open. But we've seen signs of it coming this spring. He was close in Phoenix. He was close at Pebble. He was close at Arnie's tournament. But to have him actually close the deal, it's just great to see Jordan Spieth back with the trophy in his hand and heading into a place that he loves and loves him.
I was just in the interview room with him a little while ago, and he was talking about it, sort of exactly what you said, which is not only did he win yesterday, he said, but I had to make birdies down the stretch on the back nine to win. And he was very proud of that. He was very proud of the shots that he had to hit in there. This is a golf course that he feels really comfortable on. He's always played well here. And the way that he putts the ball really fits very, very well for this course. He's coming in a really good frame of mind. He used an interesting line today. He said, you know, there's a level I've been at that I'm not back to yet. So he knows that there's still work to do, but I think that he feels really, really good about the direction he's going and the place that he has his game in. And if you look at it, for really this entire year, he's been in contention almost every time he's teed the golf ball up.
So you've got the defending champion, Dustin Johnson, who probably more than any other golfer on the planet seems to be able to all of a sudden turn it on when it's been turned off. He's just a supreme talent. He's got to be one of the favorites. We mentioned Spieth. Justin Thomas, who put on what can best be described as a Ben Hogan-like performance moving the golf ball in the final round of the TPC less than a month ago. He's got to be a favorite. So those three right there. Who else is kind of on your radar? I've got one name, Patrick Cantlay, who a couple of years ago when Tiger won, people forget, had the lead outright leaving the 15th hole before I think the enormity of the moment caught up to him. But Patrick Cantlay's a guy who I could see winning a Masters at Augusta National. Who else is on your radar this year?
I think John Rahm is a guy who's got a game that fits his golf course, and he's now he's fresh off becoming a new dad, so he may be coming in here with a little more motivation. It's going to be fascinating to see what angles of attack Bryson DeChambeau brings at his golf course. You know, if you had asked me a year ago, which major is Bryson DeChambeau least likely to win and which one is he most likely to win, I'd say he's least likely to win a U.S. Open and most likely to win a Masters. And he proved me wrong at the U.S. Open. You know, he played bomb and gouge golf there, and it worked. Going to be interesting to see how he attacks this golf course this week and if it is playing really firm and fast, whether the way that he wants to play will work here.
Thank you for bringing up Bryson DeChambeau, and I'll get you out of here on this. Ron Cyrak at ronsyrak.com, our guest taking Dead Aim. He made some excuses in November. I think he was embarrassed. He did not have his game for whatever reason in November. The plan didn't come together. And I think more than anything else, it was a blow to his pride, and he was embarrassed. This guy's a world-class talent and a world-class thinker and tinkerer. And it's one of these things, I just don't put anything past him. And I think that, you know, if he's motivated and if his game is on, it's going to be fascinating to see how he does indeed play Augusta National. And can he actually fly it over the corner on 13 and out into 14 fairway to play back there? Are some of those angles actually going to be possible? And if he does pull it off, will the Masters react the same way to a Bryson DeChambeau win as they did to Tiger's wins early on when they completely changed the golf course?
Yeah. Will he try to drive number three? You know, I mean, there's a lot of fascinating things that we're going to see here. You know, what we saw in November is part of the genius of Augusta National, and I appreciate this more every time that I come here, you don't have to be off your game by very much for the course to beat you up. And that's the absolute genius of Augusta National, is you can shoot 64 here. It rewards good shots, but boy, it can punish those ones that are bad, and they don't have to be that bad to get punished.
It's Masters number 32 for that man, Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com. And when we return, Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer takes Dead Aim at this, the 2021 Masters Tournament, presented by Neogenic Stem Cell and Regenerative Therapies.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Neogenic Stem Cell and Regenerative Therapies. Between his father and him, the Green family has covered more than 100 Masters tournaments. Ron Green Jr., well, he's on site, as usual, at Augusta National Golf Club, and we caught up earlier this week. Before we get to the Masters, let's begin with Sunday and Jordan Spieth's reemergence from the ashes. We've been seeing signs of this all spring. He was close in Phoenix. He was close at Pebble. He was close down at Arnie's tournament. But yesterday, he put it all together on the weekend, and especially on a Sunday. There was no backing in to this win. Charlie Hoffman pushed him. He had to fire a 6-under-66 to get it done, and he got it done. And it was just great for golf, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's been coming. I mean, it was, you know, as I told somebody, I said, you know, on a day where they celebrate the resurrection, interesting that Jordan Spieth wins another golf tournament finally. And, you know, I mean, and Lydia Ko almost did the same thing at the A&A. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard to find a more popular win than that one was with Jordan winning, because he's been there, been nibbling. You know, you sort of get there. And he talked about the evolution of sort of getting comfortable again on a Sunday near or in the lead, and then, you know, playing better with it. And, you know, it's amazing for a guy who, when we were here in November, was an afterthought and sort of like, wonder if he'll ever get it back. Now he is the, I think, the betting favorite this week. I mean, and hard to argue with it. I mean, he's a guy who, and as we've talked about Phil Mickelson through the years, can come through the gates here and sort of flip that emotional switch and understand the place and how to play it. Well, now he comes in on a roll. I mean, he looks like, and he's playing like Jordan Spieth again. And, you know, it's been going on 4 years since we've seen it. But, man, it's like, now that it's here, let's see how far it goes. And, I mean, if you said, all right, I get one guy at the Masters, he might not be my first pick, but he'd be seriously considered.
We will get to some picks here momentarily. I want to talk about Charlie Hoffman for a second. I could be wrong on this, and if I am, correct me, but I think he was in a position to do something that's done very rarely. I remember Davis doing it one time, and that is winning the week before, and that was your last chance to get in the Masters. Wasn't that the position Charlie was in?
Yeah, I think so. And, yeah, Davis did it. I think they played New Orleans the week before when Davis did it. And, you know, it's part of the, I guess, sort of the allure of the tournament, you know, right before this time being San Antonio. And, you know, more of the focus was on Ricky Fowler trying to play his way into the Masters, and he didn't quite do it. Although if he could play that first round over again, he might've had a chance at it. But yeah, I mean, Charlie Hoffman is close to making the Valero Texas Open his own version of Davis Love at Harbortown going. I mean, when they play the Valero, Charlie Hoffman's going to be in contention.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest Taking Dead Aim, my man covering his 40th Masters this year at Augusta National. I had Ron Cyrak on earlier, and I asked him this question. I'll ask you this. You've covered it now for 40 years. I'm not going to ask you to give me one. I want you to give me three times that you walked off the grounds at Augusta National and you said to yourself, man, I just don't know if I will ever see something as great as this.
Well, easy. 1986. I mean, you didn't have to walk off the grounds in the 86. You just sort of floated off them after Jack had done that. And that just was, it was just so good. I mean, the only thing I would have different about 1986 was what I wrote. I'd like to have a chance to redo it. But I think I was overwhelmed by it. I think when Tiger won in 97, given how he won, you know, the scoring record, the margin of victory and the societal impact it had. I mean, that was just remarkable. And then, I mean, I could pick any number of other ones. You know, I would think probably 19 when Tiger won again. You know, there are other ones when Phil finally won and made that gigantic leap into the air and that. But, you know, Tiger winning in 19 just because we really seriously –
wondered if we'd ever see something like that again, and there it was. And you know, it just took a while to settle in.
Ron, as happy as we were that there was a Masters tournament in 2020, the vibe on site with no patrons, and you described it in great detail back then, but there almost seemed to be, and I don't know if I'm using a good word here, but there was almost a pall over the tournament. Just sort of everybody was happy we were doing it, but there was still kind of a gloomy feeling. Do you sense an exhale on the grounds of Augusta National? There will be patrons for this tournament, and even though it's not back up full bore, does it have that Masters feeling as that first rite of spring? Are you getting that happiness, joyous vibe that is just part of the experience there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hesitate to say anything is back to the way it used to be, but it, you know, it feels like the Masters again. I mean, it is gorgeous. The weather forecast is what you would draw up if you could put one together. The golf course is beautiful. The azaleas are in bloom. I mean, you know, John Rahm's wife had the baby just in time. Jordan Spieth snaps an almost 4-year winless drought, you know. Rory's got a new swing coach working with him. All the stories are sort of there. Justin Thomas has just won the Players' Championship. I mean, it's got every reason to be excited about it. I mean, it's just, it feels right. And that's as cool and unique as the November Masters experience was. It's funny, as I was driving down here, I was thinking, when I was thinking about last fall, two things came to mind. One, that I could stand so close to the 12th tee because there were no patrons and no ropes that I felt uncomfortable, and I would actually back away so I wouldn't interfere with guys hitting shots. But the other was, it felt darker. You know, it was November. It literally darker, and you know, sort of the angle of the sun and all that, it looked different and felt different. And you know, if you saw all the pictures from last year with the leaves falling and you know, all the autumn colors and everything, there are very few hardwoods on the golf course here, and most of those pictures were taken underneath the tree near the bend of the 13th fairway. And but you know, it was great to be part of it and be able to experience that. But this is what the Masters is supposed to be.
There's no chance we're seeing 20 under par based on the course conditions we saw with the women's amateur this weekend. Augusta National's having none of that this week, yes?
I wouldn't think so. I just think nature's going to take it, you know, have the impact on it. And I think it was so soft last year and last fall, and it played so differently. I don't think they're going to have to do anything to have higher scores. I think they'll put the flags where we know they're going to put them. The ball's going to run out in fairways. And, you know, I think it just, you know, it will do what it always does. It will reward players who can hit it in the right spots on the greens, guys who can hit high shots into those greens, and guys who don't three-putt. I mean, as somebody who's developed a very close relationship with three-putts lately, if you can avoid them this week, you're going to be up there on Sunday afternoons.
Rod Greed Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. He's covering his 40th Masters this week. As far as Tiger Woods goes, what is the buzz from people who might know? How is he doing comparatively? You know, we all have the image of you know, the Washington football team's quarterback going down a couple of years ago, and how just horrific not just his injury, but his recovery process was. And I think that was all our fear about Tiger. What have we heard about his recovery, and how is he doing physically?
You'll be surprised to know that there's not a whole lot of information out there.
Stunning.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty quiet. You know, when I talked to somebody really close to him at the Players' Championship, I asked how he's doing. All I got was, it's really rough. Really rough, twice, is what he said. But so, you know, I think we would all expect that. But I don't know. I don't have any concept of whether he's ahead of schedule, behind schedule, if it's going the way they wanted to or any of that. I think we're all hopeful that, you know, one of these days we're going to get those pictures of Tiger at least standing up and doing something. You know, he may be that way now. I don't know. But, no, it's just, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to any of the players who talk to him on a fairly regular basis to sense what they're saying. But I don't know. But then again, I wouldn't have thought Brooks Koepka was going to be here playing this week. And guess what?
Yeah, I was stunned. Of course, I'm always amused when Brooks gets on a microphone. He's fantastic. And the whole, I wouldn't have shown up if I thought that I was only going to finish second. I mean, what a great line. But this guy is just a few weeks removed from some serious knee situations. And that is not the easiest walk in the world. Is it 50-50 at this point whether or not he actually tees it up on Thursday?
Again, not knowing all the details, but my sense would be walking the golf course will be the biggest challenge he faces. Now, obviously, swinging a golf club 19, 20 days after having knee surgery, having had an ACL reconstruction myself and going back to playing golf again, I know what it's like sort of trusting it. But, you know, he's been through that part, and he's a tough guy who thrives on doing hard things. But, even when healthy guys, in good health, active guys, they feel it. I mean, you start dragging after a day or two walking these hills at Augusta, and then you start, if you can get yourself into contention and still have all, and add that part of the equation, it's just another thing to deal with. I mean, I think it's a great bonus that he's here, and if he can play, terrific, because I think, you know, he looked like he was back to being Brooks Koepka, and, I know I'd miss that because I really like him, think he's something special. He's going to put on that bulldog face of his and go out there and like, y'all don't think I can do this, just watch. Well, we're going to watch.
The other story that I wanted to touch on with you briefly before we got to favorites, last November, as big a story as it was that Tiger was the defending champion, it was dwarfed by the threat of the invasion of Bryson DeChambeau and what he was going to do to Augusta National. And for whatever reason, his plan completely failed. And I believe that he was embarrassed by it. I think he's a very prideful individual who works very hard. And I think his pride was hurt. And he was embarrassed by his performance in November. Now, this is an entirely different golf course than he saw in November. And I am very fascinated to see if he continues with the plan that he wanted to implement in the fall and it didn't work, or if he's got a new strategy. Because, Ron, if this guy is able to bomb it into the 14th fairway off the 13th tee, that's going to bring an angle into play we've never seen before.
It's interesting how, I mean, he was all the talk in 6 months ago coming in here in November and what he was going to do or what he could do. And he's almost under the radar, it seems like, right now. I think, given what Jordan's done, and, maybe the fact that there doesn't seem like, other than Jordan, maybe a clear-cut favorite right now. I mean, just because DJ hasn't played well the last three starts, and, you know, nobody knows what to make of Rory and all this stuff. You know, I don't think – I mean, DeChambeau does not – build his game around throttling back. I mean, I think he's going to find every spot he can to hit it as hard as he can. You know, I mean, he is a slenderized version of the guy we saw here in November, not saying he's slender, but he's sort of refined what he's done. And I think, I mean, obviously he's a cerebral, scientific, equation-driven guy, and I think he will take some of what he did or learned last fall and apply it to this year and figure out beyond just the overall level of his play, just what he could do better or what he thought might work and didn't. So, I think he, as he always is going to be a great curiosity when he shows up here Thursday morning to start.
Get you out of here on this. Let's talk favorites. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. I wrote down three names off the top. DJ, even though his last couple of tournaments, he hasn't really looked all that great. He seems to be one of these guys that can just flick a switch and turn it on, and he is the defending champion. So I think you got to have him on the favorites list. Jordan Spieth, one of Augusta's favorite sons already. He loves the course. The course loves him. He's had success there after last weekend. He's got to be on the list. Justin Thomas, who put on a Ben Hogan-like ball-striking performance at the TPC less than a month ago, he's on my list. And then people forget that 2 years ago when Tiger won, Patrick Cantlay walked off the 15th green on Sunday in sole possession at the lead of the Masters, and I think that the moment got too big for him. I don't think it would get too big for him again. I like Patrick Cantlay at a course like Augusta National, especially if it plays hard. Who are you, who is on your list?
Well, I mean, I think you named some obvious ones. You can't discount Dustin Johnson. I mean, he is the number one player in the world for a reason, and, you know, a sustained reason. And, yeah, if you're going to give me him, I'd be very happy. You know, I think JT, I just see him in a green jacket for years to come. Patrick Cantlay, yeah, agreed. I mean, could win any week he plays. Needs to, feels like he needs to make a putt or two at the end sometimes. I just keep having this feeling that John Rahm could be the guy this week. I mean, he's only played four of these, but the last three he's played, he's finished in the top nine. And the first one he played, he finished like 22nd and played the last three holes six over par, I think. So, you know, just had the baby, just became a dad. I mean, remember Bubba Watson with his little one they right. adopted, I guess. And I think there was a Danny Willett story, something like that. I don't know. John Rahm is built to win majors, I think. And I'm fancying him at the moment.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, covering his 40th Masters tournament, that's Ron Green Jr. And up next, our boots on the ground from the Central Savannah River area, host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, takes dead aim at this year's Masters, presented by Neogenic Stem Cell and Regenerative Therapies.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We're taking Dead Aim, presented by Neogenic Stem Cell and Regenerative Therapies. John Patrick and I have been friends for more than 20 years, and when we met, he'd almost covered more than 20 Masters tournaments already. He's the host of the Augusta Golf Show and is in his usual position this week in the Media Center at Augusta National. John, let's get started. Off air, I just got this information. This is your 37th Masters?
That is correct, yes.
Oh, three away from the parking space. This is, I don't know if you knew this, but once you get to 40, as a working member of the press, 40 Masters covered, they make sure you have your own parking space, which is just, it's sort of magnificent. It's kind of nice, right?
Yeah, it's wonderful. And we'll briefly go through it. About 12 years ago, they cut down a tree on number 12, and they made some plaques and called it the Masters Major Achievement Award. For those who had covered the tournament 40 years, they got a plaque from that tree. Yes, you got a parking space. Now, the parking space, not quite as attractive as it used to be, because now in the new media center, we all park right next to the media center, but there are also tickets involved. So that's a nice thing.
That's very nice. Well, we will look forward to that. I know that you weren't as involved in November as you normally are when it comes to covering the Masters. And so I'm going to speak of this from a big picture thing as someone who's lived in Augusta all those years. It was my opinion that even though we were so thankful that the Masters was happening in November, just to have it happen in 2020 was a big deal. And I get that. And we were all happy about that. But there seemed to be just sort of a, I don't know if this is the right word. I used it earlier, a pall over the event, that it just didn't have the joyousness of it, the happiness that is involved. And I just get the idea from talking with people and from seeing coverage that feeling is back. We may not have the full complement of patrons that we normally do for Masters Week, but there are patrons on the ground, and there is a feeling of the rejuvenation of the tournament and the rite of passage of spring that the Masters brings, and just an overriding sense of happiness and joy is back. Am I correct in that?
No, that would be true. You know, it's not the full complement of patrons, and it's not the patrons that would normally be here. But I'll tell you something that it has done that you didn't really think about until I saw it yesterday. With fewer people, they find themselves congregating around the greens. You don't see as many fairways lined with fans. They're all kind of congregated, you know, around 16 and around various greens in the area, which will be exciting when things happen on those greens. I'm careful to say this, but there may be times when things happen that you don't really realize that it's only a quarter of the people out there because of how many people find themselves around particular greens on the golf course.
Well, the places that you hear the traditional roars, the patron grandstands at 15 and the grandstands at 16, and, of course, the one right behind 12 there at Amen Corner. Those, I guess there'll be social distancing involved, but I think this speaks to your point. Those will have plenty of patrons, and you will still hear maybe not the major roars, but there will be roars coming from those grandstands.
Well, there are no grandstands.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there are no grandstands. But you will hear major roars. I was walking back yesterday across the golf course and trying to cross nine fairway, and I can't tell you who it was, but somebody, you know, knocked it in for a two out of nine fairway, and you heard a roar, and it was great. It was great to hear. So you will hear them. 12 will look a little bit different, you know, because there will be people sitting on the hill behind the tee, but there are 15. There'll be people standing on the side, on the right side, but no grandstands anywhere on the golf course.
That kind of surprises me. I thought that maybe they could control the social distancing thing by having grandstands and designated places you could sit.
You know, that's probably a decent point, but I'm going to defer to them that they thought that out.
Yeah, the men of the Masters tend to get all the details right. Who are we to question? John Patrick is the host of the Augusta Golf Show, our boots on the ground at the CSRA event. He's our guest taking dead aim. Quickly, let's go back to this past weekend. This is only the second time that the Augusta National Women's Amateur has been contested, but it already has that feel of a must participate in event if you're a lady golfer coming up, and it's definitely must watch for anybody who's a fan of the Masters, because we get a look at the course a weekend before and how it might play, and oh man, the course looks in magnificent condition, and if Mother Nature, you know, sort of cooperates just a little bit, we can have that firm, fast Masters that we've been longing for, especially after seeing Dustin Johnson fire a 20 under last fall. Your thoughts on the course and what you've seen so far?
It is in great shape. I had the opportunity to play it about a month ago. It really is in wonderful shape. Now, as far as fast and firm, well, we've got some weather Thursday and Thursday night, Friday morning that may change some of that.
But if it's not major, they've got sub-air on the whole course. They can manipulate it, can't they?
To a degree. The sub-air is used more for drastic measures, not so much for a shower that blows through or something like that. I think they're very slow to use sub-air in those conditions. I think it's more a function of we got to get the golf course ready to be played. So we're going to see. The greens are, right now, as you and I are talking, greens are very firm. Players are talking about the fact of just how firm the greens are this week so far.
Do you sense a different attitude or feeling amongst the players now as opposed to 5 or 6 months ago when the tournament was contested in November?
Well, I think they're happy to have patrons on the grounds. They're happy to be here in the springtime. They're happy to see the flowers. They're happy. I think it's an overall happiness that we're on schedule. We're where we should be at the time of year we should be here.
As this podcast drops, we're a day away from the kickoff of the tournament and a change in the honorary starters, one that was announced a year ago. I think it's going to be a very anticipated moment. Always is when Jack and Gary are on the tee, but joined by Lee Elder this year.
Yeah. Again, a bit unfortunate that those three will not have a full complement of patrons to kind of cheer them on. But, you know, again, as you mentioned, as you and I are talking, the chairman on Wednesday will go into greater detail about the announcement he had in November regarding certain portions of this community, Harrisburg and the Laney Walker area, where they're going to do some work there, dedicate an awful lot of money to improving those areas of Augusta. So we'll know more shortly, and as to how that's going to work, and the fact that they're going to endow a male scholarship, a scholarship for a member of the male golf team at Payne, and then they will create a women's golf team at Payne College. And those scholarships will be in the name of Lee Elder.
Is this a one-off, or is Lee Elder now an honorary starter until he chooses not to be?
I think it's a one-off.
A one-off?
I believe that it is.
John Patrick, host of the Augusta Golf Show, is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk about some of the particulars in terms of participants and who you kind of like, who's got a little buzz about them as we head into the tournament. DJ's the defending champion, although his last couple of outings haven't been anything spectacular, but he seems to be one of these people that is able to just turn it on at the drop of a hat at times if he finds something, so you really can't ever discount him on this golf course. Justin Thomas can best be described what he did at the TPC, putting on a Hogan-esque ball-striking performance. I really feel like it's not a question of if, but when Justin Thomas wears a green jacket. I feel certain he will win a Masters. And then Jordan Spieth, last week, rising like a phoenix from the ashes, finally, after coming close this spring so often. He's a favorite son at Augusta, and he loves the course. He's a betting favorite. Those three are top of my mind. I've got a couple that are bubbling under the surface. Who are top of awareness for you right now?
Well, I think it's hard to discount Dustin. I think it's an interesting phenomenon. Phil is the best example of this. I think they all love coming to play this golf course, and they all love playing in the golf tournament. But once you win the golf tournament, something takes over. You fall deeply in love with the place, and you're consumed by the place. And I think Dustin is kind of there. I think he's got a U.S. Open, but I think something about this place gets to him. And I think, you know, like Phil, as we used to say about Phil, maybe it doesn't matter as much how they're playing when they get here. It's when they get here how it kind of turns them on. I do think JT will win this thing one day. I'll be curious to see if, you know, and if he hits that little low hook that he introduced us to at the Players, because that could serve him well on some of these golf holes. Jordan's an interesting case for me. I don't know that I buy into peaking too early. I don't know that winning last week was 1 week too soon. He's playing some good golf. I just think on the PGA Tour, it's hard to win back-to-back.
Well, I think it's only – hasn't it only happened once before that someone won the week before and then won the Masters?
I think it was Phil.
Yes, it was. He won in Atlanta. Yeah, and then won the Masters.
So as far as Jordan is concerned, just for that reason alone, I think he'll be in the mix, and I think everyone will get excited. But I just think it's really hard to do on the tour. I'll give you a name that nobody names because, you know, maybe this bodes well Sunday. But I saw a tweet, and I wish I should give credit to who the tweet was from, and I don't remember. A very statistical guy who had run the numbers for, I think, the last 20 Masters, has done all of the stats, all of the, you know, the strokes saved putting, the strokes gained in driving, the strokes,
right,
you know, greens and regular, all of that stuff, and had come up with where they stood, and then they with winners of the tournament. I say all of that to say, as he put all of those numbers together, the name that came out was Sung J.M.
Oh, my gosh. That's incredible. Of all the names that you could pull out, you could have scraped me off the floor right now.
You heard it here first. Unless you have Twitter, then maybe it wasn't first. But, I kind of thought that was fascinating myself.
Wow.
That's the name that came out.
Wow. Get you out of here on this. John Patrick's the host of the Augusta Golf Show, our guest taking Dead Aim. Coming into the tournament in November, and this was what was amazing to me, with Tiger Woods being the defending champion, he was actually under the radar because everyone was so concerned about the assault that was taken for granted as going to happen by Bryson DeChambeau. And quite honestly, his plan didn't work. He says he wasn't healthy. I think, personally, that it was embarrassing to him. I think his pride took a hit, and he's actually under the radar as we head in to this Masters. And this is if it plays firm and fast, and if he is capable of hitting the ball as we've seen him hit it when he's on, as he was at Bay Hill and of course at the U.S. Open last year, he could conceivably caused the men of the Masters to make changes the way they did when Tiger won?
Yeah, you know, I think we've talked about that before. I think he's different. I think he's the one-off. I don't know that they make changes because of what one player can do. I think it would have to be something that, you know, they felt like was something that was going on throughout the tour. And even having said that, you know, Rory has hit it farther than Bryson on occasion. So I don't know. He still on this golf course has to prove it to me. He's Missouri. I mean, I got to see it. He's got to show me. I got to see it work here. I'm not convinced.
JP, as far as, and you mentioned changes, of course, there were no changes made between November and now. That's not possible as the course is open for member play. Do you think that when the course shuts down in May and when we next see it a year from now, there will be noticeable changes to the golf course?
Well, 13 is where everybody is focusing their attention, and it just seems inevitable. It just seems we're moving down that path. A couple of years ago, Chairman Ridley kind of laid out to the USGA, you do what you have to do, or I'm going to have to do what I have to do. So I think that does seem inevitable. I don't think he's in a hurry to do it. I think every tournament is the testing ground. How much do we need to do it? Do we truly need to do it? Yeah, let's go. But it just seems like we're marching to that point. But I don't envision much else. I don't think many other things will change. He's a golfer. He understands the game. You know, Billy Payne made little to no changes to the golf course. I don't think this chairman is adverse to making the changes. I just think he wants to go about it very carefully. I think 13 is inevitable and maybe the only one we see for a while.
He is the host of the Augusta Golf Show. That's John Patrick. I'd also like to thank Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and keen Masters insight this week. Between the three, gosh, almost 110 Masters tournaments covered. Wow. Want to remind you, keep up with us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim and give us a like. Featured there now. Links to articles on everything going on in and around the Masters this week. Enjoy this year's first major. And if you can, try to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And I tell you what, if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy. And I'll see you right here real soon, Taking Dead Aim. Presented by Neogenic Stem Cell and Regenerative Therapies, where all you have to lose is pain.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.